Wondering what's next in your business or personal life? Welcome to Success to Significance, Life After Breaking Through Glass Ceilings, a podcast dedicated to helping you with all of life's challenges, discoveries, and opportunities. Whether you're seeking a new career, retirement, or simply wanting to make an impact in your community or the world, join Jen Duplessis and her guests as they explore how to start, what to do when you're in the thick of a change or growth, and how to leave a mark in this world after breaking through your next achievement. You are moments away from the aha you've been seeking.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Success to Significance, Life After Breaking Through Glass Ceilings. My guest today is Elizabeth Bachman, and let me take this opportunity to just introduce her real quickly. She is the go-to person for advanced level training in speaking, presentation skills, sales, and leadership. With a lifetime spent perfecting the art of presenting, she helps high-level clients master a message that brings the funding they need, the allies they want, and the recognition they deserve. She's a sought-after speaker and strategist in the Silicon Valley, nationally and internationally, and Elizabeth works with leaders and influencers who need to become conscious and compelling presenters. She helps them present as smart, down-to-earth, loose, friendly, even funny, and still be taken seriously. She is the host of the international podcast called Speakers Who Get Results. Having spent 30 years directing some such luminaries as Luciano Pavarotti, and I know he's an opera singer, and Placido Domingo in more than 50 operas around the world, Elizabeth brings a wealth of tools to help business professionals become respected presenters. She speaks five fluent languages, and she has global experience, which brings global experience to her clients. Wow, a whole mouthful. I'm having a hard time speaking today. Whatever reason.
I should have sent you the version with the pronunciation in it. Sorry about
That's
that.
That's okay. No, yeah. It's fine. I just feel bad because, you know, Luciano, I know he's really
Luciano
big.
Pavarotti.
Yeah. And I'm going, sure. Right, all those languages. What are the five languages you speak? You speak English, obviously.
English, French, Italian, German, Spanish.
Oh, awesome.
So I started French early on because my grandmother spoke those five plus Latin, Greek, and a little bit of Japanese. So she's got me beat. And I used to speak a little bit of Japanese, but I did a little bit of study and now I've forgotten most of it. There was a time in my life where I thought I was going to go back and forth to Japan. And then turned out I would go back and forth to Europe instead.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I'm learning French. I had 4 years of it in high school, forgot it all, understand it, you know, a little better than I can speak. It can read it much better. Speaking is a whole different deal, you know, and I'm working on it. Yeah. So I've been taking lessons for now, I think 8 months or so. So that's good to know next time we talk. Right. Well,
yeah.
You just
have to go to France and
spend
a month.
Yeah.
Rent an apartment in Bordeaux, for instance, or in some village.
We're from there
because we can nowadays. You could work from there.
Oh yeah.
And just get to know your neighbors.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
When I was a student in Paris, I practiced there was a market right outside the apartment we were in out in the suburbs. And I practiced with the cheese lady. I got to the point, and when I finally got to the point where she greeted me with a handshake, which means that she actually acknowledged me as, you know,
one of her,
as somebody, you know, someone she wanted to talk to. That was a big deal. The reaching over the counter to shake her hands every Saturday.
Yeah.
I was really proud of that.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, my husband's French, he's French Italian. I have that going for me, but we go to Paris quite often, and it was funny because you and I were talking about this, when we were speaking yesterday, you know, about traveling and, you know, like, you know, spending half your year, one place, half the other place. And we're on the brink of that right now. And that's why I was asking that question. And one of the places we're looking at is Cassis, because that's one of my favorite places in France. And what I've learned about going to Paris, because I live on the East Coast, you know, we can hop on a plane at 6:30 at night and be there at 6:30 in the morning. And it's so much easier than going to California and,
exactly.
Or even Hawaii. Right. And, so we go frequently and I can speak enough to get by and then some, but I know when I go into the outlying areas, they don't speak English at all. And so that's why we're looking for something that isn't there. Yeah. Yeah. So really interesting about that. Well, okay. So we digress, a whole bunch of rabbit holes there, but, it's fun to talk about different languages. I absolutely love it. So let's talk about you though, and what you really, really do, because I know that, you know, you work with women and, you know, you've got some really cool phrases that I'm going to buzz out here, but as I buzz these out, you know, I want you to share with us, you know, how you made this transformation from working in the opera world to feeling like, wow, this is my calling to help people with their presentations as well, and leaders with their presentations. But, you know, you have some phrases you have is, do you feel invisible, that your presentation skills can't be heard, that it's maybe just sort of the peanuts, you know, like the teacher, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
Go from boring to bravo, you know, which is definitely a bravo, you know, at the opera and all of that. And, you know, the mistakes that people make and online presentations that wow people, right? And I think that, you know, and I have a colleague, by the way, and I need to introduce you to her because she used to live in your neck of the woods. She now lives in Texas, but she was... I'm horrible at this because I love opera, but I don't know all the terminology. She was the one with the woman that had the horns, right? They had the horns. She was like the...
Oh, yes. So Brunhilde. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she was a dramatic soprano.
Oh yeah. Very loud voice, right?
Yeah.
You know, I say, can you just do something? And I go, whoa, hold on. It was loud. Uh-huh. But she now is a body language strategist. Because that's how you speak, you know, when you don't understand the language, which a lot of times we don't understand when we're listening to speakers because they're the experts, right? And we're kind of learning from them. So we don't really understand their language, but being able to physically, you know, show pain or show love and joy, you know, is what she specializes in. So I imagine there's some kind of connection here that you saw for yourself. Uh-huh. You know, that could penetrate women leaders. So tell us how that happened for you.
How all that comes together. Well, described the last
mouthful.
20 years of my life.
Longest question you've ever heard.
Oh, that was, it's a good way. It's how we put it all together. I started as an actor, realized in college that I was a better director than I was an actor. Hmm. And I'm an oldest child, so I'm kind of bossy anyway. That's when I told my sisters I was changing my major to directing instead of acting, they went, well, duh, you boss everyone around anyway. You might as well just give up and get paid for it.
Right.
And always loved languages, and languages travel. And opera is where I found my artistic home. And spent 30 years always as a freelancer, except when I was a staff director at the Metropolitan Opera for 12 years. But I had a portfolio career from the very beginning and learned that it was an entrepreneurship career and you had to keep selling yourself. For a while, it was fine. What I found, you talk about glass ceilings, is I hit the actual glass ceiling first in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I wanted to run an opera company and I knew I'd be good at it. And my colleagues kept saying, oh yeah, you'd be fabulous. Yes, any company you run, I'll come sing. You bet. I would love to see you run an opera company. So I thought, great. And these opportunities come around two or three times a year. I would apply. I would get to the short list, you know, of the top two or three. And then they'd hire a man.
Yeah.
And I saw that over and over. What I recognized at the time was that what I recognized at the time was that when you are worried about money, and opera companies are always worried about money, the tendency is to trust a man before you trust a woman. But also the thing I didn't recognize until later, until I started doing the work I do now, is that I was marketing myself to the wrong people. I fell into that classic, the thing they call the tiara syndrome, where if you just sit back and do a good job, you will be recognized. You know, the handsome prince will come and sweep you away. I thought that being recognized and lauded by my peers was going to be enough. What it didn't occur to me until later was that the people who hire the general director to run an opera company are the board of directors. I should have been marketing myself to them and speaking a language that they would understand and hear, which was a connection I didn't make until much later. So one of the reasons why I help women's voices be heard is because I've made all those mistakes. I made all the mistakes myself. So, you know, hopefully help people not make those mistakes. The rest of the story was I started an opera company myself, learned a whole lot about being a boss, and then ultimately came to the point where I realized I'd been doing it for 30 years. It was becoming a little routine, and that I was in serious danger of no longer being moved by the music. I knew it too well. I knew it too much. The magical moments were just becoming work. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be in the arts, you've got to have those magical moments. So I took all that, put all that together to start training, doing presentation skills more than speaking. Speaking, I love helping someone do a speech. I love helping someone do a keynote, or how do you show up well on a panel? But it's also how do you communicate within your organization?
Right.
And the thing that I recognized, starting from working on a Japanese opera back in the 80s, is that men and women speak different languages. We use the same words, but it's different languages. And what I now know, looking back, is that I would be speaking quote unquote women's language. I don't actually call it that because it's not that cut and dried, but I realized that I was breaking rule number one of presentation, which was I wasn't adapting my message to the people who needed to hear it, the people who could hire me. And I didn't learn that until I started my own company. And then I had to speak to raise the money to run it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all coming together, all those various pieces.
Yeah. So let's dig into this just a little bit. So you said, you know, the biggest mistake, and I know you've got three big mistakes, right? Presentation mistakes that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. But you said one of the biggest mistakes is not adapting your language to that of your audience. So what does that look like in the real world, whether you're a speaker speaking on stage or whether you're, a leader trying to lead a team to a new product or service, or, you know, you're speaking to your management team, it doesn't matter who that is, but how does that lay out when, let's say, like, I just got back speaking, 5,000 people, and it's hard for me to go mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. How many men, how many women I need to adapt, everything. Walk us through how that starts, that being the number one biggest mistake, is not adapting. Walk us through that one. And then we'll go to the next mistakes that people make when they're speaking to people. Cause I know you've got an empathic approach to this, and maybe that's where the woman language comes in, is the empathic approach, but we'll find out in a moment.
Well, I call it strategic empathy. That's one of my signature techniques. And that is to know your audience, put yourself in the shoes of your listeners. Who are the ones you care about? So for you, you're speaking to 5,000 people. If you're going to, then who are the ones you really want to reach?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the ones you're going to care about? If you want to be concise and clear for the sake of the people who are hearing the material for the first time, this is one of the things that gets into mistake number two, which is too much how and not enough why. The temptation, because we know our material so well,
right,
is to go into how to do what you want to do instead mm-hmm. of why should it matter. Mm-hmm. So the strategic empathy is, why should they care? On one hand, for the single focus task-oriented people, you want to be clear and concise. That works for everybody. For the multi-focused people who think in terms of context and web, you want to add stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the stories, stories will illustrate your point. You give your point and then you do a story to illustrate it, but keep it concise.
Yeah.
The other trap that's easy to fall into is to ramble off into a long story. I have people in my family who do that. And I'm going, now wait, what are you trying to say? What's the point?
Yeah, I'm lost. Right.
And
I'm lost.
Yeah. And you get lost. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, in a way, it's the way multi-focus people are trained to speak as children, as little girls. But it's not the way little boys are trained to speak or trained to listen. And then we grow up and we can do rambling stories with friends, but in a business context, be clear and concise, tell them why it matters.
Yeah.
What should they be paying attention to? And then illustrate it with stories.
Yeah. I love that. And so that's okay. So point number one is just, you know, focusing on the why and not the how, specifically for the person that you're trying to target in there. So it's not looking at the group and saying, okay, there's X amount of women, X amount of men. So now I'm going to change the way that I do something, you know, to get most of them. But it's also, you know, not staying so loose like that so that you're trying to attract everybody. It's isolating and letting people self-select out of what you're trying to do, right? So if it doesn't become their why,
yes, exactly.
They'll learn, but they're not going to learn. They'll learn, but they won't take action to work with you because they've self-selected out. But those who you're speaking to and saying, you know, with my high-level clients or with those that, you know, take action or those that are at a ceiling and they're stuck and they want to go to the next level. Someone might not want to go to the next level. So it's the words you choose in there. The second is back up everything with stories and be concise yep. in the stories. So have I missed the third one? Was that all blended?
We haven't said the third one yet.
Okay, good.
So I think of it really as presentation falls into presentation skills generally. Falls into three categories. You've got the strategy, the script. Mm-hmm. Those are the two we've spoken about. Mm-hmm. And then style, your delivery style.
Yeah.
So how you deliver that. And that, going back to language, one of the things nowadays is that particularly in the business world, we are very international. Lots of people are now working with teams around the globe. Mm-hmm. Say we're speaking English. So I'm fluent in five languages, but I teach in English mm-hmm. because that's the one I don't have to think about. And then the service I can offer is someone for whom English is their second or third language is to help them address an audience in a way that they need to, you know, getting the English right.
Yes.
To speak it better, to be clear, mm-hmm. to enunciate, to have clear diction. I learned that from 30 years with opera singers.
Right.
So your delivery style is tempo. I think of it as the melody of the message.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things people have been talking about for years is women who end their sentence with an up talk because everything sounds like a question. which depositions you.
Yes.
It makes you less than. And it is a strategy that is somewhere our ancestresses, our grandmothers, taught girls, don't be pushy. Don't put yourself out there. And that's still there. So that women often will speak in a tentative way. And in a business context, Western business was built by men. So it functions on the single focus, task-oriented principles. And in the last decade or so, there's been a whole lot more about empathy and emotional intelligence, which is the female side coming in. But that's pretty recent.
Yeah,
it is. So the old, we're dealing with centuries of habit. Centuries of the men had one world, the women had another. And so these habits catch us, and then you can sabotage yourself by the style, by your delivery style.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that. You know, Pennsylvania, just as a whole, the entire state of Pennsylvania, men and women alike, speak like that. I don't know why this is like this, but it is. They say, do you want to go to the store? Did you like that? And they do this up tempo, you know, uplifting or whatever you call it. They do that. And it drives me nuts because my grandchildren are now picking it up. And it comes from their mother, not from my son, from their mother. But now he's starting to do this. And I'm saying, you know, I don't want to pick this up because it does sound kind of interesting. Now, it's funny because a lot of speakers will ask questions like, does that make sense? Versus.
But that's a strategy.
Am I making sense? Is this making sense to you? And so that's really what you're talking about, is eliminating that uptick on the end of a question or a statement.
Well, the uptick, the uptalk on the technical word I learned was uptalk.
Yeah.
Is a, when you use it, when you're proposing your idea, when you're saying, I think the team should do this, we need to pay attention to that. One of the other things, this is a tangent, so I'm going off on a tangent now.
It's okay.
One of the things that single focus thinkers, again, that Western business was built on that to me, and it's great because that's how you get things done. Saves you time. It's how you go on, get the task finished. But it also leads to tunnel vision. And if you ever look up the statistics of how many businesses fail, or say how many tech projects fail, it's something like 67%. It's a really terrifyingly large number. The multi-focused people are the ones who notice the side issues that the single-focused people are too focused to notice.
Right.
Such as, before we put in all this money into creating a new product, did you know that our competitors already have something out there? And it's not as fancy as yours, as the idea you have, but it works. Why should we reinvent the wheel? Now, if you said that, did you know our competitors already have a product? It kind of does the same thing yours does. You're never going to be heard. And then the tunnel vision people will go in, they'll spend hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars, hundreds of hours to create something that they can't sell. Happens over and over and over again.
Wow.
That's a case where using strategic empathy and speaking a language that, this is a real case that happened to a client of mine, and then I had to coach her through it, to speak to the people who had the great idea. The wonderful Jennifer Cohen talks about don't being romanced by technology. And there was the CEO was really excited by this fabulous idea he had, which was going to reinvent the wheel. And my client had to figure out, try to talk him out of it. And he actually fired her for being negative.
Wow.
Moved her to a different project, fired her from that project. And they, you know, and they lost $500,000 over the course of a year with this. She'd been right, but nobody cared because she didn't tell him in a way he could hear.
Yeah. Very.
So that's the sort of situation that I do my best to correct.
Yeah.
Or to help people, to give people the tools to communicate that important information.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting because, you know, I think about, you and I were talking about this yesterday too, you know, being overlooked for promotions and whatnot as a woman, you know, early on in my career, you know, in the mortgage business, because, you know, it was very heavily, you know, man's world. And I was a token woman in it. And I just the way you were saying that, I remember saying one time, well, I'm as good as he is. And I never got what I wanted until I went in. And I told you this yesterday, when I went in with facts and figures. Yeah. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty here. This, instead of I'm just as good as he is, you know, going in and saying, this is exactly what I've produced and this is what they've produced. So tell me why I'm not being promoted. And I got the promotions, right? Just a different tonality. I'm still me. It's just a different tonality. You know,
it's speaking a language that they will hear and understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And I have so many clients who are in that position of being the problem solver, the fixer, taken for granted, and then a man gets the glory and the promotion.
Yeah.
Whereas the woman's done all, not just the woman, where the team has done all the work.
Yeah.
Part of that is also, how do you talk about what you're good at in a way that is not bragging, but does make the point? I have a whole course about that called the Visible and Valued program, where how you become visible and valued by talking about what you're good at without bragging, because women aren't supposed to. But the thing is, if you don't, someone else is going to step into the vacuum and claim the credit for the work you've done. Happens every day.
Yeah. And it could be another woman who just is better at communicating too. And I think we need to understand that. So here's my question. One of my last questions as we kind of wrap up our time is, you know, as a speaker, and I hear this from both men and women, you know, that people come up after you speak and say, oh, I was so inspired. That put me to tears. That was so great. It was the best. In fact, I just heard this the other day. You know, I learned more from you in 45 minutes than I've learned with my coach in 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great accolades, great compliments, all those wonderful things. But when you talk about strategic speaking for results, give us a tip on how to get over that or break through that glass ceiling of thanks for the compliments, but are you going to work with me?
Yeah. Yeah. So part of it is to sometimes if you're doing it live, just have a card to say, reach out, say, make an offer. You can't do that with a keynote. You can do it in a workshop or in a networking group. And you could say, I'd love to hear more. If you could say, so what was it? I'd love to hear more about that. Mm-hmm. Here's my card. Let's talk.
Yeah.
Here, give me your card. Often what I will do in a networking event, when I first rebranded as Strategic Speaking for Results, my graphics person had made this super fancy card full of colors and there was no place to write. So I now have a card that's very simple, lots of white space, so that I can write, talk to me about this problem, and hand them my card to say, you know, without saying I can help or I can sell it to you, but also collecting, make sure that the host, the host of the event is collecting feedback.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can do that electronically nowadays and it's worth the investment. So collect feedback. One of the great ways to do it is to say, I know somebody who needs this information, you know, contact me about so-and-so, or I know a place where you could speak. Let's have a conversation. The key is to have the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because afterwards you can find out what it was that they liked.
Yeah.
So if you can sell a conversation, you can also, if you have a product to sell or a book, you can sell the book, get them on your mailing list, et cetera. Depending on what it is, for what I do, it's so individualized and so specific for each person that I want to get them on a conversation to find out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we did. Lots of tools like that.
Yeah. And that's what I did with her. And we're actually talking. She's like, I think I need a new coach. And I said, okay, well, let's have a conversation, see if this works for you and for me both, you know. And I think that's an important piece of it. So there's so much that you offer. There's so many things that people could reach out to you for. What is the number one thing that for someone who's listening to this says, you know, yes, you can do a plethora of things. We can find that on your website, which is elizabethbachman.com/speaking. And it has a lot of information about the different topics that you speak on. And we'll have that in the show notes as well. But if you could isolate this into one thing that you love to do, that if someone's listening, they know someone, they can find the person, or they are the person who need that help. What is that one thing you just love to do? It's your 80-20, right? Everybody has it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, connect with me on LinkedIn, because I update that a lot more often than I update the website, and so that you can see the various services I offer. And then I do I do a video every Wednesday where a five minute tip. So you can sign up for the speaker tips. That's usually the best way to do it, is sign up for speaker tips. It's free and doesn't go forever. It's just enough to give you little tips on how to be a better presenter. And scroll through the list of the video nuggets, I call them, and see if there's something that, how to not be afraid of a question and answer session, how to speak on a panel, how to deal with a micromanager, things like that. There are lots of topics out there. And
it's always like that. When the student's ready, the teacher will come. And so if you go, especially on YouTube, because I know you have a YouTube channel as well, and you can look at, you know, some of the things, oh, this is exactly what I needed today. And more than likely, she already has it there for you. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, Elizabeth, what would you like to leave us with? For those that are listening, what would you like to leave us? A quote, a mantra, a thought?
Okay, here's a mantra for you. Anytime you're making a presentation for which you want a result, whether it's within an organization, or if it's in a networking group, or if you're speaking on stage, any of it, it's always a sales call. So it's a sales conversation. I like to think of it as an enrollment conversation. Mm-hmm. You want to be exciting, compelling, because sales is like sex. Nothing happens till somebody gets excited.
I love it.
There's your mantra.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That's wonderful. Well, thank you again, Elizabeth, for joining us today.
Thank you, Jen.
I learned so much. Thank you. So I learn. This is why I do podcasting, because I learn. I always take notes. I always learn something. Appreciate the wisdom that you gave to us, and you know, all of the resources that you're providing to us as well, I think are absolutely wonderful. So we'll have all of that in the show notes for all of you. Again, Elizabeth, thank you for coming here on the show with us today.
Thank you, Jen.
Absolutely. So a reminder, everybody, just take a second and scroll. Use that thumb and scroll down and give us a great 5-star rating. Write a comment. Write a review for us. Something that you learned from Elizabeth that you are going to put into action to help you break through your glass ceiling. And don't forget, subscribe to us and follow us on YouTube as well, where you can see us talking rather than just hearing us talking, and learn more about the podcast. With that, I say have a fantastic day and thank you so much for joining us.
You've been listening to Success to Significance with Jen Duplessis, the number one podcast for people wanting to give more value and make an impact. Loved this episode? Be sure to subscribe right now at www.jenduplessis.com/S2S for more stories, strategies, and thoughts to help you gain significance and success. And if you like what we're doing, don't forget to give us a rating and review so we can continue to bring you the best content possible. Join us next week for another breakthrough episode. Thank you for listening.